Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases specially set for oral argument today, and you all are the first one up. So I understand that you have spoken with our clerk and announced the time that you intend to argue and that you all are prepared to proceed. All right, with that, I will have the clerk call our first case.
The court will now call Bell Helicopter, Central and Western Florida. And may it please the court, Ms. Cynthia Hill to argue for the appellant, and Mr. Jason Smith to argue for the appellee.
Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice. My name is Cynthia Hill, and I am pleased to represent Bell Helicopter here before you today. Before I begin my argument, I would like to take just 1 second to thank the court for its consideration and compassion with rescheduling this oral argument. And I also want to thank my co-counsel. It is that sort of civility that makes me proud to practice here in Tarrant County. In Texas, we are prohibited as an employer from discriminating against anyone on the basis of any prohibited reason. In this particular case, Mr. Burnett brought claims for both racial discrimination, he is Caucasian, and for age discrimination, he is 40. Before the trial court, though, we only heard the age discrimination case, and that's what we're going to be focusing on here today. After a trial in the matter, the court found in favor of the plaintiff and awarded him, a 40-year-old man, almost $900,000 in damages. We are here, we are challenging both the legal and factual sufficiency of the verdict. And what I'd like to focus on today is the evidence that was before the trial, unless the court has any sort of questions. In order to prevail, Mr. Burnett had to show not only that the reasons for his discharge were false, but that they were motivated by age discrimination. Like I said, we're arguing both on a legal insufficiency and a factual insufficiency. Under the legal insufficiency, the test would be whether or not the evidence would enable a reasonable and fair fact finder to find in favor of Mr. Burnett on his age discrimination claim. Under the factual sufficiency, we are going to ask that the court consider all of the evidence on the record, both contrary and as well as that supporting the verdict, and set aside the verdict. What we have to show here is that age, that's the key question. Was age a motivating factor in Mr. Burnett's termination? Mr. Burnett had worked at Bell for some time. He had worked at Bell since 1996. For the first 15 and a half years of his job with Bell, he was working in clerical positions and in dispatch. And he was a union covered, which were union covered positions. There is no dispute that Mr. Burnett performed those positions very well. In the middle of 2012, though, he decided to apply for another position, and that was for a senior operation manufacturing specialist. This is a position that was not inside the bargaining unit, and it had completely different job skills as opposed to his other as his other positions. In his other positions, what he was responsible for was getting the helicopter out the door, getting the parts out the door. However, in his new position, his main responsibilities, as we're seeing, as he said at trial, were to make sure that the work flowed well, to make presentations, to have meetings, to communicate with upper management, with vice presidents, with international business leaders, and to ensure that that they were kept in the loop. The problem was that while Mr. Burnett was very good about doing dispatch and getting things out the door, he was not that great at communication or presentations. Now, Mr. Burnett's first job supervisor was a woman named Carissa Kimbrough. Ms. Kimbrough worked with him for several months during 2012. And during that partial year, she She rated him satisfactory on his first performance review, but said that in the following year he really needed to work on his communication skills. Now, Ms. Kimbrough was deployed to Afghanistan at the end of 2012. During that time, for the months preceding her deployment, she was shadowed by a woman named Rebecca Rosenbaum. Ms. Rosenbaum had come down from Textron, another division at Textron, had come down and had been working at Bell for some time. She took over the management of the manufacturing operations specialist while Ms. Kimbrough was deployed. She noticed, as did Ms. Kimbrough in her review, that Mr. Burnett did not have excellent communication skills, that they weren't very crisp, and that he needed to work on that.
Now, remind me again, counsel, his previous supervisor, prior to being deployed, there were some mild criticisms of his work. Remind me of what we have in the record is...
What we have in the record is that going forward, and that he had done an adequate job pulling the parts, as it were, which was part of the job, but that he needed to work. He needed to work forward. And I'm sorry, if you'd like, I can quote it directly. But 2013 should be used to hone visual presentation skills of information and clearly, concisely presenting the key messages. She also said that the presentation of information is the most important facet of the job, and in the current environment, conference rooms and directed presentations of program is our major means of projecting the performance of informing multiple levels of management and customers of our position.
Thank you, ma'am. Could you give me a record site for what you just said?
Yes, sir. That is 2RR53, also 5RR, plaintiff's exhibit number 2.
Thank you, ma'am.
Now, the new supervisor, Rebecca Rosenbaum, began working very diligently trying to get Mr. Burnett to improve his performance skills. One of the things that he had complained about was that he had too much work. So what she did is she moved some of his work to another employee. That employee is a woman named Melissa Holt. Melissa Holt was in her 50s, and subsequently, Ms. Rosenbaum, who is accused of age discrimination, was instrumental in the promotion of Ms. Holt. Even with the help that Mr. Burnett was getting from Ms. Holt, his performance did not improve, and she continued to give him verbal counseling all through the spring and the early summer of 2013. In June of 2013, Ms. Rosenbaum involved HR. She sat down with Mr. Burnett, and she gave him a written warning about his performance. There were numerous things contained in the performance, but they all focused around his presentations, primarily focused around his presentation skills and his communication abilities.
When did Ms. Rosenbaum take over as his superior supervisor?
I believe it was the first weeks of January of 2013.
And the first warning
The verbal warnings began in, I believe she testified, in February and March when they were setting goals for the year.
And was the warning at that time communication also?
Yes, sir. It was primarily his presentation skills at that point and his
inability. What does that mean?
What the job entailed, and thank you, Your Honor, for asking me that. It took me a while to understand what they meant by that. Presentation skills, what basically you have a drive center, which is producing the drive components for the helicopters. Those parts go from Fort Worth from the facility in Grand Prairie up to Canada. So basically what you have to do is you have to go through the various dispatching organizations, find out where the parts are, what the various other customers need, and you present that to the upper management, for instance, up in Mirabel, Canada, saying, okay, we have so many gearboxes. Here's what we need. Talk to the folks in the military programs in Amarillo. Here's what we have. This is what we need. This is what are your needs? They presented these things on a daily meeting so that the upper management knew where we were in the manufacturing process. And they presented those in verbal presentations each morning, as well as through PowerPoints and visual presentations. And then they presented for some of the upper management, when there were problems and bottlenecks, they would have meetings where they sat around and explained where things were. Is that?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry. Justice, do you have a question?
I'm not sure if I do or not, but it seems to me if an employer were dissatisfied, if he couldn't do that job after the years he had put in and had done the jobs, each job he had had, quite successfully to be promoted up, why was consideration given to putting him back in his previous position?
Yes, Your Honor, it was. Bell Management sought, and there was testimony at trial that Bell Management sought to find another position for which Mr. Burnett could be either regressed back, he would have to ask to be regressed back to the union, but they looked at other non-exempt positions for him, and they contacted several people, and there just wasn't a place that would accept him. But they made several efforts to find him another job.
They tried to place him elsewhere, but couldn't do it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Also during that time, Mr. Burnett himself was looking and calling other people and other managers that he had worked with in the past to see if they could find anything. Mr. Burnett did testify at trial that he did not put in any applications for any of those positions, but that he had called people and was unsuccessful in securing any sort of alternative employment at Bell. I don't know that this was in the record, but there was also a layoff that happened in 2013. So. I apologize. I don't believe that that is in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Sorry. All right. As I was saying, in June of 2013, Ms. Rosenbaum sat down with Mr. Burnett. She went over all of her concerns with him. Mr. Burnett and she continued to work. They had weekly meetings trying to improve his communication skills. She gave him a 21-day period to improve. During that time, she also did his mid-year performance review. And while she found that he did certain things very well, his communication and his presentation skills still were not good. At the end of the 21-day period, she made a decision that she was going to have to terminate him for the position. He just was not fulfilling that position. His communications and presentations were not up to par with all of the rest of the people of her team. And just for a moment, her team consisted of seven people. Mr. Burnett at this time was 39. He was not in the protected age group. There was another employee who did the same job who was 37. And then there was another person who did not do the exact same job, but he was in his late 30s also. The other four members of the team, including the ones that Ms. Rosenbaum had hired and had promoted, were all much older. They were in their mid to late 40s, 50s, and 60s. There was no evidence at trial that Ms. Rosenbaum ever took any sort of disciplinary action against any of the older employees. In fact, the only person she said that she had to take disciplinary action was Mr. Burnett, who was one of the younger people in her team. And once again, in July of 2013, she had made the decision that she was going to have to let him go.
Can I stop you and ask you a question? Something that does concern me in this case. He was only put on a formal performance improvement plan in June of 2013, and the decision had already been made to fire him by July?
Yes, sir, the end of July.
How long was he on the formal?
He was on it for 21 days.
21 days?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And how old was Mr. Eisler
Mr. Eisler was 37 years old. He was only a couple of years younger than Mr. Burnett. Mr. Eisler had also been in the position for 2 years and had been successfully performing the position for 2 years before Mr. Burnett had been there. I see I'm running short of time, so let me just focus on a few things that I'd like the court to focus on. What we have here is a woman who was in her 30s, who made a decision to terminate a man who was also in his 30s. The only reason that we are before this court and before any court is the fact that Bell allowed Mr. Burnett to take his vacation and so he wouldn't lose it before they terminated him. And it was during that period that he turned 40. What we have to look here is not whether or not is the decision we would have made, but whether or not it was motivated by age. And it is our position that there is no evidence that this matter was that this decision was motivated by age.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Mr. Smith.
Because there's ample evidence that age was a motivating factor, and because the applicable law supports the judgment, we are going to ask the court to affirm the judgment of the trial court. Bell Helicopter's appeal is basically asking this court to retry the facts, which were the province of the fact finder of this case, and to ignore the applicable law. And to start with the applicable law, we need go no further than Justice Scalia's opinion in St. Mary's Honor Center versus Hicks, in which he says, the fact finder's disbelief of the reasons put forward by the defendant, particularly if the disbelief is accompanied by a suspicion of mendacity, may, together with the elements of the prima facie case, suffice to show intentional discrimination. Thus, rejection of the defendant's proffered reasons will permit the trier of fact to infer the ultimate fact of intentional discrimination. The Justice Scalia's opinion was cited both by the Texas Supreme Court as the governing law in Quantum Chemical versus TNS and Walmart versus Canchola. The Texas Supreme Court has said Justice Scalia's standard that he set forth in St. Mary's Honor Center is the standard. And then the Supreme Court followed up in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, which is a very similar case to this case. And in Reeves, the court noted that in appropriate circumstances, the trier of fact may reasonably infer from the falsity of the explanation the employer is dissembling to cover up the discriminatory purpose. Such an inference is consistent with the general principle of evidence law that the fact finder is entitled to consider a party's dishonesty about a material fact as affirmative evidence of guilt. And on pages 17 through 19, we go through chapter of the appellee's brief. We go through chapter and verse of why the stated reasons for the performance plan that they say led to the termination were false or were otherwise unworthy of credence. For instance, Ms. Rosenbaum, who was 32 years old at the time, had told Mr. Burnett that he needed to go chase a part to get it out because, again, the overlay of this entire situation is the fact that Bell Helicopter implemented an SAP system that shut down a lot of its operations in terms of getting production out. And so people were manually having to do that, and they were having to switch their responsibilities. And he was told by Rebecca Rosenbaum to go find that part. Well, in the write-up she gives him in June, before he's terminated, she actually criticizes him for that. And he goes, hey, remember, you sent me out to get that part. The fact that she's trying to get him fired for something, or to criticize his performance for something she asked him to do, is the type of evidence that shows that the stated reason is just unworthy of credence. And we go through the fact that the other employees, now they said Greg Eisler was 37. There's no evidence in the record of that. They didn't offer his personnel file, and I would challenge that, and the finder of fact was free to infer from the only testimony regarding Mr. Eisler's age, which was Mr. Burnett, that Mr. Eisler was substantially younger. But Mr. Eisler had typos on his PowerPoints, but he wasn't disciplined or terminated. And going through pages.
Mr. Smith, was he cautioned or criticized?
There's no evidence of that. And both Russell Creamer and my client testified that Greg Eisler and the younger employees were treated well by Ms. Creamer and allowed to get away with things or do things that Mr. Burnett was targeted for criticism. So we would encourage the court to go through chapter and verse, those pages, where it's very clear that the stated reasons are false and unworthy of credence. We have a strong prima facie case. We've established that he was qualified for the job. His last review that he received February before the August he was terminated was that he had on-target, good, solid performance. And that was by his previous supervisor. Then he gets the new younger supervisor who hears the CEO that she considers a role model say, we need to, I want to see fresh faces right out of college.
Well, I want to ask you about that because that point stuck out to me in your brief. And I know you've quoted one of my favorite lines in these type of cases from the Fifth Circuit where it says, And I'll quote the Thornborough case, employers are rarely so cooperative as to include a notation in the personnel file fired due to age. So these things are proved up by circumstantial evidence, as you know. And you make a lot of argument regarding the CEO statements, but the CEO statements to various community groups about we're looking for college graduates, tell me why you think that that's shows age animus and why we should consider it as competent evidence, circumstantial evidence that your client was discriminated against.
Certainly. The statements were made by CEO John Garrison in various town halls of employees of the company, within the company. So these were company meetings.
So this wasn't like a community town hall.
No.
This was interior out at Bell.
Correct.
Today we're having a meeting of the sales department.
Correct, or a meeting of the employees, and he would give a rah-rah speech to managers of what he wanted to see in the company. And that statement is actually, it's some evidence that supports the finding that age was a motivating factor, and we would ask the court to look at it. It's on point. It's Manichek versus PB Power. And in that case, there was an email that said, they sent an email that said, we want to have a 21st century sales force. And the court in Manichek came back and said, the email, the 21st century sales force email, provided, was evidence of the business plan to provide evidence that PB Power intended to assemble a younger workforce, creating an inference of Manischek's age was a factor in the termination. In Manischek, there's an email that says, we want to see a 21st century workforce. That was considered a business plan, and I would suggest that CEO John Garrison's statement that he wanted to see fresh faces right out of college was also a statement of their business plan. And just as in Manischek, it was some evidence of age discrimination. I would argue it's some evidence of age discrimination here. But we don't even need that statement. Under Quantum and Reeves and St. Mary's Honor Hall, if we have a strong prima facie case, which they haven't disputed, and we have evidence that the stated reason was false, and we go through that in pages 17 through 19 about how the stated reasons just weren't true, and it was an excuse to get fired. This court is to accept the findings of fact and facts and inferences in favor of the judgment. They want you to they have suggested several places throughout their brief that they want you to have inferences in their favor and not in the finder of facts' favor. And we would just argue that there's some evidence, even without that statement of Garrison, that the stated reason was unworthy of credence and therefore pretext, and the real reason was age discrimination. Quantum Chemical versus Tiennes is a very similar case. In that case, there were performance problems. There weren't any statements about age. And in that case, the Texas Supreme Court said that the evidence provided that the stated reason that the performance issues were false or unworthy of credence, together with the prima facie case and the fact that they were replaced by a younger employee, no one disputes this replacement was a decade younger than my client. That was sufficient in Quantum that the Texas Supreme Court held that age was a motivating factor. Again, the court here is being invited by Bell to retry the facts and ignore the applicable law, St. Mary's Honor Hall, Reeves, Quantum, and Mandichick. Those cases support are the applicable law and support a judgment in favor of plaintiff in this case. They've also argued that there's not sufficient evidence of plaintiff's damages in this case. We provided extensive testimony with regard to the fact that his uncle and his father both retired from the company. We've cited two cases from different courts of appeal that said a finder of fact could infer that someone would work at a company till retirement. And that's what the testimony was. And they didn't even dispute that at trial. If you look through the whole record, they didn't dispute damages. They didn't argue damages. That wasn't their issue in this case. They focused on liability, and the finder of fact made a decision based on the future lost wages, which is what they challenge. They also argue that the future lost wages finding is subject to the cap, but both the U.S. Supreme Court and every Texas Supreme Court, or every Texas Court of Appeals that has addressed the issue, has held that that cap for compensatory damages doesn't apply to damages for front pay. And that's because compensatory damages, that cap covers compensatory damages, whereas front pay is an equitable remedy under the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act, Chapter 21 of the Texas Labor Code. And so we just asked the court to follow the U.S. Supreme Court and every other court of appeals in Texas that has addressed the issue and hold that the cap doesn't apply. Finally, with regard to the issue of, there's one thing I wanted to make sure I covered. The record shows that the most important aspect of the job was getting the kits out of the door. There was a co-worker that testified with regard to the difference in treatment of my client versus other younger clients. This further bolsters the evidence of pretext. There is ample evidence throughout this record. Yes, Your Honor.
Other than your client's own testimony, Mr. Smith, what do you feel is the best piece of evidence that we have before us from other sources that age discrimination was the reason your client got fired? Do you believe it was the co-worker's testimony, the CEO, the excuses that Bell gave? Can you point to what you believe is the best piece of evidence?
The best piece of evidence is the lack of credence of the excuses given by Bell that's set forth in detail at pages 17 through 19 of our brief.
What do you make of the question that I asked Ms. Hill with regards to previous criticism, which I think everyone would admit was not as harsh, but under his previous supervisor, of his presentation skills?
I think the finder of fact was free to consider that, but also consider that in that evaluation, that supervisor said that Mr. Burnett had on-target, good, solid performance. And I think that's another strong piece of evidence, Bell Helicopter's own words, that on-target, good, solid performance in February, and then by August, he's shown the door after years and years with the company. I just think the other thing that courts say that you can look at here is timing. And before he gets Rosenbaum as a supervisor, on target, good, solid performance. He's doing a good job. After he gets Rosenbaum as a supervisor, he's out the door within months. And therefore, we think that's further circumstantial evidence that supports the conclusion that age was a motivating factor. And again, Justice Scalia tells us in St. Mary's Honor Hall, the Supreme Court tells us in Reeves, the Texas Supreme Court tells us in Quantum Chemical, that that's sufficient. And but we have more, and therefore we'd ask the court to affirm the trial court, the finder of fact, in their determination of what the facts were, if they were in the best position to make that call, and then follow the law as provided by Justice Scalia and the Texas Supreme Court. Unless you have any other questions, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Rebuttal, Ms. Hill?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Before I begin, do any of the justices have any questions for me?
Do you agree with Mr. Smith's statement that you don't dispute that there was a prima facie case? That's what happened after that?
Your Honor,
shifting after that?
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Your Honor, when we have a case that has already been tried, the prima facie case falls out. And the question does not come up whether or not there is a prima facie case. It's whether or not the decision was motivated by age. And that's the sole question that we're looking at here. Mr. Smith has argued that in his brief that there has that Bell's reasons were just a pretext. However, in the brief, they do admit that two of the reasons set forth in the June 13th memo were true, that those things actually happened. Now, the rest of the stuff is not that these were false. It's just that they don't agree with it. And an employee's own assessment of his skills is not competent evidence to find age discrimination. There is no one who Ms. Rosenbaum clearly believed that Mr. Burnett did not have the presentation or communication skills that she deemed necessary for that position. And so the question is, the courts don't second guess whether or not she was right or wrong. The question is, was she motivated by age? And there's just no evidence that age was the motivating factor here. In his argument, Mr. Smith brought up the SAP system, and that was a new system that was rolled out in Bell in 2013. And that was a whole new computer system. Bell changed their whole computer system in 2013. And by all accounts, everybody and everything in the record shows that it was not a stress-free rollout. However, the point is that applied to everybody. That applied to every single person that worked for Ms. Rosenbaum. That applied to everybody at Bell. The fact that the SAP was rolled out does not have anything to do with this case. And in fact, one of the things that Ms. Rosenbaum said to Mr. Burnett during his mid-year performance, where she told him that he wasn't performing well, was that, except on the SAP, you're doing a great job finding workarounds on the SAP. You're our go-to guy on finding workarounds on the SAP. So the question about this new system rolling out is really not relevant to this case. One of the things that also came up is whether or not there was any evidence in the record regarding Mr. Eisler's age. There was. I sought to quickly find the record reference, but it is in there that he was in his late 30s, and I believe that there is direct evidence that he was 37. Mr. Burnett initially tried to say that Mr. Eisler was not subject to any sort of disciplinary action, or Ms. Rosenbaum never got over there on him. However, if you look in the record at 2RR106 and 3RR23, on further questioning, Mr. Burnett admitted that he personally had seen Ms. Rosenbaum criticizing Mr. Eisler's performance, as well as the other employee who was younger. That was Chris Womack, who was also in his late 30s. So while he initially testified, oh, no one got it like I did, both he and I believe Mr. Creamer had said that they saw Ms. Rosenbaum critical of a lot of employees on these sort of things. Finally, I'd just like to briefly touch on the question of the stray the remark by Mr. Garrison. First of all, as Justice Pittman had suggested, this is a situation where the evidence was that Mr. Garrison said in a town hall meeting of all Bell employees, listen, part of our overall talent strategy is to get new college graduates. In this case, that's not relevant. Mr. Garrison had nothing to do with the termination here. Mr. Garrison had no idea who Mr. Burnett probably was. He was the CEO. Now, that was just a overall talent strategy. The courts have repeatedly, both in on page 41 of our brief, you will see a line of cases that say those sort of comments are not relevant to the question of age. And also, we would point the court to the record where Judge McCoy specifically stated that she did not put any credence on any of these statements by Mr. Garrison or on the co-worker testimony of Mr. Creamer. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Ms. Hill, would you please give us the record citation for Mr. Eisler's age?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Mr. Eisler's age, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought I had it in here. I can pull it up very quickly.
After argument, I don't mean right now.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Your Honor. I should have had that marked. I thought I did, but I don't have that specific page. I know it was both during the testimony of Ms. Rosenbaum as well as the testimony of Mr. Burnett.
Well, I don't even think we knew that was an issue or a question. But.
Okay. I'll be happy to provide those record sites.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments here today on this case. We appreciate them. Your case is submitted, and we will be in recess very briefly for a panel change before our next oral argument.